Friends, welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In this episode, Melissa Locke encourages us to opt in to joy, not as a simplistic escape, but as a rich expression of revolutionary love, that way of being that, whether within or around us, sees no strangers.
I've been asking people and paying attention for inklings of joy this week. I highly recommend this, by the way. So here's a sampling of what I heard. When my friend surprised me with one of those muffins she knows I love. Playing Minecraft with my friends. Sitting together by the fire doing a puzzle. Scrunching through the snow while the moon came up over Lake Hiawatha by myself. A date in our matching snowmobile suits. Finding that used green chair that fits just right in the corner of my new workspace. Saying the word lemur. Seeing the new success of my boyfriend's band. Nesting. I got to use my staple gun. Definitely the giddiness of my friend telling me about an amazing first date that happened after so many letdowns, even with COVID. Even in the winter in Minnesota, and it involved going to the grocery store. Going sledding with our grandchildren on Tuesday. The Back to the 50s car show in June. Driving my 64 Dart with the top down through the State Fairgrounds car show on a warm summer's evening, and feeling my heart soar with the sights and sounds of 14,000 other vintage cars and car fans. That is joy. Ah, summer, remember that? I'm Melissa Locke, and in this Fabric Podcast, we're talking about joy as the gift of love. Joy. It is a gift, right? It feels good. That moment when you say this. But some of the things I heard had a little more, I don't know, not joy in them. But still, there it was, unmistakable. Listen to these. Given the depth of despair I'd been feeling, I can't describe how powerful and joyful, but in a raw, grounded way, not oh happy fluff, that it felt to see the images and words emerge and merge in what I was creating. I was connecting with and affirming myself. Equally as important was the sacred response when I shared, the joy of being seen, affirmed, acknowledged. They got it. And this. I was grumpy about the ice, but I went out anyway. Then there was a glimpse of the thin tree shadows against the snow illuminated by the setting sun. It was marvelous. And this. Some joy last night for me. I witnessed vulnerability being met with honor and care. And the ripples of humanity that when I was held enough to see myself and consider that I could be enough, that I more deeply saw and valued the other guys. That was bittersweet, but it was joy. And then what about this one? For me, I think of the breakdowns. I've had some deep inklings of joy in them. The sweetness of being able to be with my son, for him to finally let me see him because there was nowhere left to hide. Joy, that momentary sense that you belong just as you are right this moment. And not just to anything, but to something deep and wide and extravagant. You are alive and here, plugged in fully. All is well, even when it isn't. Have you experienced that? Maybe it was when you lost yourself for a while in preparing that meal, writing that song, playing with those kids, working on that project. Or when you saw your work being enjoyed or useful to someone else. Maybe it's the ease you feel with that person who sees you and stays. Or when you got to witness that amazing moment in someone's life and realized you had had a part in it. or the delight of discovering something wonderful and sharing it with someone else, or that affirming text you got that helped you keep breathing and pushing through that hard thing, or those slippers your mom made you, or the laughing and connecting that actually can happen on Zoom after all. The joyful relief of finally being heard and valued for who you are. Or how good it felt to be able to run again after being sick for so long. Or being able to laugh again. Or hug again. Being able to hug again. This is our final podcast in this series of weeks exploring love as a force to transform, heal, and build us into a world with no strangers. Love is wonderful, even in the Hallmark card and mushy love song sense. Love is revolutionary when you extend it to see no strangers in others, in your opponents, and even in yourself. No strangers. Everything and everyone belongs. That love flows out of wonder. It comes with the price of grief and the fierceness of anger. Wonder, grief, anger. We've talked about all of those, and today, joy, the gift of love. Joy feels good. We all want more joy, don't we? So why isn't there more of it going around? Did you know that some data scientists in Vermont started measuring real-time sadness and happiness? Their tool is called the Hedonometer. It's been analyzing words in tweets since 2008. And in case you are wondering, 2020 broke the previous record for the unhappiest day in the English-speaking world. Not just once, but multiple times. Today, the Star Tribune showed Minnesota having its highest death toll on record ever, including an increase in a category called deaths of despair. This is us. This is our lives right now. Is it even possible to feel joy amidst this heartbreak? Is there even time for joy with the urgent problems at hand? How can I feel joy when I know what others are dealing with? And if I do feel joy, does that mean I'm somehow ignoring reality or avoiding the work that I have to do or diminishing the suffering of others or my own? Am I being selfish? Is it okay to feel joy, even for me, now? So I have a memory from childhood that keeps coming up as I think about joy. I was maybe 9 years old. I don't remember all the details of the day, but it had been good, really good. With my parents and my grandparents who were staying with us while my grandpa was in Minneapolis for some medical treatment. He had collapsed at dinner not too many weeks before that, but that day we had laughed and probably watched squirrels try to outwit our new bird feeder and spit watermelon seeds. I'm sure we had eaten dinner and then lingered a long time at the table to talk smart, only clearing the dishes away in time for a very long card game of left foot, right foot with multiple decks of cards. The Eagles were probably playing on the record player. But earlier that afternoon, I had likely wowed them with music of my own, a moving performance, vocal and dancing, of Over the Rainbow in my leotard and rainbow knee highs. I was so happy as I tucked myself into bed. And then I was so sad. I couldn't go to sleep. I finally got up. It was late, but my parents were still awake. As soon as our eyes met, my tears started. "Oh, kiddo, what's wrong?" As I collapsed into open arms, I said, and this I do remember almost exactly, I said, "I don't know. It was such a good day together, and I'm afraid something bad is going to happen." So I don't remember honestly what they said exactly, but the message and the feeling I have held on to, or maybe it has held on to me, I imagine it sounded something like this. "Oh, sweetheart, It was a fun day together, wasn't it? And you know what? You're right. People get sick like Grandpa. Bad things happen to people that we love. People die. We all do. And we love each other so much, and we love days like this so much that it hurts to even imagine that. You know, your sadness means you have a lot of love. Our love means we can have wonderful days like today together. We are so glad to get to be your parents. They tucked me back into bed. I was still sad, and I think I was joyful. I was lucky to have parents that I could go to, and that when I did, they didn't say, "Ah, turn your frown upside down. Don't worry, kiddo, be happy." Oh, they taught me about joy, that it comes with all sorts of other emotions, worries and wonderings, even sadness. And you know what? You can still enjoy the joy. There is a childlike lightness that exists, unaware of the bad, heavy stuff. It's good to be around that innocent, pure joy. But too soon, that changes. And we start to wonder if living with joy is even possible in this world. Author Rob Bell talks about this in his talk with the very exciting title, An Introduction to Joy. But it really is a great talk, funny, and has a lot of depth. In it, he does a great riff on one of the sections of the Bible that, the few times I've really looked at it, has actually made me laugh out loud, cry with this feeling of recognition, and a lot of times just say, huh? This ancient Jewish wisdom poetry is called Ecclesiastes, and Rob Bell found clarity and relief there when he found himself wrestling with the same struggle that these poems exposed, that humans have faced for millennia. Is it possible to be here and enjoy this life with all of the anguish and the heartbreak that seems to come along with it? Here's basically how Rob summarized Ecclesiastes. It's all meaningless. Life is simply vapor management. And not only that, wisdom and hard work, they're meaningless too. And so is being good. Wise, good, hardworking people, they still die. They still have bad things happen, just like every other fool. Sometimes even worse. It's bad. But you know what else? It's also precious. And the real evil is when we're surrounded by goodness, plenty, and beauty, and we don't even let it in. We don't even see it. So he goes on to talk about this kind of lightness that we see in ourselves and in each other that isn't so innocent. This lightness comes from ignorance, indifference, and a willing naivete. It doesn't acknowledge the sorrow, the pain, the anguish, and the heartbreak that is part of life. So Bell calls this out as cynicism. We don't want to be cynical or naive or indifferent, but it is one of those animals that our American culture trains us to feed, isn't it? We're offered a steady smorgasbord of options to feel good, at least for the moment. And if we don't, there's usually something we can buy or someone we can blame. Cheap stand-ins for joy on this side of all that heaviness. But here's the thing. In trying to just stay happy all the time and just feel good, we become subject to the very heaviness, heavy stuff that we're trying to avoid. It becomes the constant focus of our attention, our energy, our money. What is wrong? Who's to blame? Who should I be afraid of? Who's going to fix this? Does this sound like anyone's newsfeed? Does this sound like stranger making? It does to me. The real stories and dreams of others, even of ourselves, must be kept at a distance if we want to just be happy. Because our real stories and dreams come along with some heavy, heavy heartbreak. Here's Rob Bell.
This is Why? Cynicism is so easy and lazy. Cynicism dips its toe in the pool of the heavy. Cynicism skirts the outer edges of the heaviness of life. The cynic goes on that rant or that riff, right? You know what I'm talking about? That's lame, and that's just derivative of that, and most of the stuff on Netflix is mediocre, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? Just that, like, oh, God, they're at it again, just lame. Everything is just held at a distance and picked apart. The cynic is a recreational user. They flirt with the heaviness. They move around its exterior perimeter. But the joy is found in going all the way into the heaviness of it so that you can come out the other side. The proper response to the cynic, whether around you or within you, when the cynic launches into that riff or that rant, is to stop them and say, oh, no, no, no. It's way worse than that. We're all gonna die.
You know, it turns out, and this is what we know and need to remember again and again, there is a lightness, a joy that has reckoned with that world as it is, that vapor-like, messy, fleeting, wild, and unpredictable world. So we recognize this kind of lightness in people who have been around the block. You know them. You're probably one of them on your good days. In early June, in the heaviness of the uprisings in Minneapolis, I got a text from my Fabric podcast partner and longtime friend and mentor, Greg Meyer. It was on the last day of May 2020 from his daughter's house that was backed up to the Walgreens on East Lake Street that was burning down. Greg's text was a picture of the strawberries that were just beginning to peek out. It had been an awful week. It was the saddest day that had ever been on the hedometer. I knew he wasn't telling me or himself to buck up, little camper. He was sharing something precious and fleeting. This kind of lightness shows up when we have felt the heartbreak, when we've seen the anguish and been reminded together of how fragile, fleeting, and how precious this all is. This was the same threshold that I stepped across with the help of my parents when I was 9. That could have been a moment to learn to push away or skirt around the heavy and the joy along with it, to keep my distance, right? But instead, it was a moment of realizing that loving and being loved meant I could be sad and okay, even more than okay, all at the same time. It was a moment of revolutionary love. Love takes you in all the way and through the heavy. On the other side, a new and different kind of lightness can surprise us. And that is joy. That is the gift of love. Valerie Kaur's book, See No Stranger, has helped us start to practice the age-old wisdom of revolutionary love and see what it can look like today, close to home and in our communities. She was talking just last week about joy as part of what she's calling the People's Inauguration. She says we all have roles, we're all needed to help birth our country into one that embraces all of us. Here she describes a realization about joy that has changed everything for her.
I always thought that our labors for justice were means to ends, until I realized that I may not live to see the gifts of that labor. I may not live to see the fruits of that labor. I began to come to terms with the fact that labors for justice have gone on long before we were born, and they will continue long after we die. We have a very specific role to play in this time of great transition. We have to take humanity, take our communities, take our families, take our country across the threshold. But if we're just thinking about each day and our contribution as a means to an end, we won't last. I've come to discover that laboring with love creates enough space and time each day to let breath in. And when I'm breathing like that, when I'm giving my attention to the present moment, then I create the conditions to let joy in. My loves, I have come to believe that laboring for a more just and beautiful world with love and with joy is the meaning of life.
So joy is a lightness that can embrace all the heavy stuff. And joy doesn't wait for the work to be done. That is good news. Laboring for a more just and beautiful world isn't a means to an end. It is the meaning of life. Whoa, that is a big statement. Laboring with love and joy is the meaning of life. Let's wonder about that. My partner Joe and I have noticed that when we ask each other that innocent question, how was your day? We almost always end up answering in terms of what we accomplished or didn't. A good day was a productive day. The fewer mistakes, wrong turns, and rabbit holes, the better. And it's not just us. We hear it a lot now that we're paying attention. Of course, there's nothing wrong with a day of productivity and a job well done, but if an efficient and productive day becomes our habitual and primary definition of good, where does that take us? Sure, we can experience joy once all the work is done, once all the problems are fixed and the messes are cleaned up, the dishes are all put away, the laundry's folded. That sounds like a long, miserable, tiring wait. So one natural option is to start lowering your expectations about what is possible, right? And gradually, you and I are setting our sights on accomplishing smaller and smaller things. That new class I want to take, or that volunteer position I could be a fit for, the instrument I want to take up, or the conversation I know I need to have. Sorry, there's just not enough of me. Greg Meyer likes to remind us to ponder something every so often. His father-in-law has shared it with him over the years. Nothing truly worth working for, he says, can be accomplished in your lifetime. If the meaning of life is just to finish the work and avoid bad stuff, I think I'll hang out in the dugout with the cynics. Do you want to settle for that? I don't. And like Valerie said, we just can't last. But if laboring with love and joy is the meaning of life, that changes the whole ballgame. We don't have to settle for cynicism or martyrdom. Instead of long innings of endless toil and playing defense until the lights go out one day, every precious day is a chance to show up, to love and be loved, to realize the generous and subversive, revolutionary delight that is woven into the very fabric of our existence. There is room to breathe. There is room to breathe and for joy, even in the midst of the heaviness and the work that is never done. Okay, so how was your day? Next time you ask yourself that or someone asks you, take a breath. Notice what tends to come up for you to make it more or less fine. Perhaps it's a running list of what you accomplished and what's left to do. Maybe things you wish you had said or not said, done or not done. Things you wish you had felt or not felt. Valerie Kaur offers two questions that I think help us get beyond the good, bad, fine kind of answers and offers more breathing space. She asks us to wonder, what was hard and where was joy? What was hard today? Sense where you feel it. Somehow you managed to make it to the end of this day, right? How did you do that? And next, what was the most joyful part of your day? Every day, no matter what, she reminds us, no matter how hard, contains moments of joy. Sense what joy feels like, even just the inklings of it. Is it a lightness in your limbs, a relaxing of your jaw, a sense of calm and ease? Is it a rising heart, an open chest? I don't know. But what if you made a habit of stepping back from the good, bad judgments about a day to notice and name your resilience and your joy? What if we helped each other do that? I want to share the voice of Father Greg Boyle, a Jesuit priest who founded Homeboy Industries in Los Angeles. Callie Pliego, who has been sharing stories of revolutionary love during this series of weeks, reminded me of Father Boyle as someone who shows us this world with no strangers. He calls it kinship. In this On Being interview with Krista Tippett, she asked him how, in that world of kinship, the lines of friend and enemy, victim and survivor, servant and served get blurred in his work with former gang members. Here's where Father Boyle comes in, and he begins talking about this close reading he's been doing in the book called Acts of the Apostles, and it's basically a story of the earliest followers of Jesus and what kind of community they were. Here he is.
Well, you know, lately I've been reading the Acts of the Apostles really carefully, and if you start to read it and think it's a kind of a quaint snapshot of the earliest Christian community, that's one thing. But what if you were to read it as a measure of the health of any community? So, you know, see how they love one another, or there is nobody in need in this community, for example. But my favorite one is, it leapt off the page to me, and it says, and awe came upon everyone. So that the measure of our compassion lies not in our service of those on the margins, but in our willingness to see ourselves in kinship. And so that means the decided movement towards awe and giant steps away from judgment. So how can we seek really a compassion that can stand in awe at what people have to carry rather than stand in judgment at how they carry it? And I think that's sort of the key here. That's the place of health in any community. Forget Christian community. In any community, that's how you know that you're healthy. So recently I gave a talk, a training, all-day training to 600 social workers, a training on gangs. I had two homies with me, and one of them was a guy named Jose, and he got up, he's in his late 20s, and he now works in a substance abuse part of our team, a man in recovery and been a heroin addict and gang member and tattooed. And he gets up and he says, very offhandedly, you know, I guess you could say that my mom and me, we didn't get along so good. I guess I was six when she looked at me and she said, why don't you just kill yourself? You're such a burden to me. Well, the whole audience did what you just did. They gasped. And then he said, it sounds way worser in Spanish, he said, you know. And everybody did what you just did, you know. And then he said, you know, I guess I was nine when my mom drove me down to the deepest part of Baja California, and she walked me up to an orphanage, and she said, I found this kid. And then he said, I was there 90 days until my grandmother could get out of her where she had dumped me, and she came and rescued me. And then he tells the audience, my mom beat me every single day. In fact, I had to wear 3 t-shirts to school every day. And then he kind of loses the battle with his own tears a little bit, and he says, I wore 3 t-shirts well into my adult years because I was ashamed of my wounds. I didn't want anybody to see them. But now my wounds are my friends. I welcome my wounds. I run my fingers over my wounds. And then he looks at this crowd and he says, how can I help the wounded if I don't welcome my own wounds? And awe came upon everyone. Because we're so inclined to kind of judge this kid who, went to prison and is tattooed and is a gang member and homeless and heroin addict and the list goes on. But he was never seeking anything when he ended up in those places. He was always fleeing the story I just told you.
And awe, not judgment, came upon them. Do you feel the breathing space? I think of the energy and space inside that is devoted to judging and protecting ourselves from others, seeing them as strangers to us. What if we didn't do that? What if you and I approached others with even just an inkling of eagerness, as parts of us we do not yet know, as kin, with curiosity and wonder, awe at the hard things that they are carrying today? What joy are they carrying? What if we turned those same eyes of awe and not judgment upon ourselves? What if you turned that wonder upon your own self, including the wounds that you want no one else to see? How much of your precious energy and attention is devoted to trying to unfriend your wounds and cover them up? My wounds are my friends. I run my fingers over my wounds. We are returning to wonder here, aren't we? That's where our conversation about what revolutionary love involves began, with wonder. Where love of ourselves and others begins and begins again. Acknowledged and seen, our wounds become carriers of friendship, healing, purpose. Acknowledged and seen, strangers become kin. The defensive layers and walls fall away. These are the same layers and walls that kept out connection, healing, surprise, delight, even laughter in the face of the heavy. When there is a crack in those walls or a peeling back of the layers, even just a little, joy can come in. In Greek, the words joy and grace come from the same word, kairo, which means the culmination of being or the good mood of the soul. Kara, joy. Charis, grace. Joy is a grace. It is the sweet in the sweet labor of love that Valerie Kaur describes. It is what you hear in Father Boyle and the story of Jose, the lightness that is on the other side of heaviness. That can come when you step away from judgment and toward awe and wonder at others and at your own precious self. This is the sweet labor of love. It means pushing through some layers and some walls, some tough ones. You can do this. We can do this together, not all at once, but over time and with breathing space. Labor means pushing and breathing. Don't forget to breathe. Slow down. Pause to breathe and be right where you are with all of your senses and attention to this precious and fragile and fleeting moment in front of you, because that is where the joy is. Don't let it slip by. Don't hold back from accepting joy's sweetness. The poet Mary Oliver grabs me by the shoulders and looks me in the eyes about this in her poem, Don't Hesitate. She doesn't mince words. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give into it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind. And much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything, but very likely you notice it in the instant when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. Joy is not made to be a crumb. I think we all have a hunch that this is true, but we have to keep remembering and realizing it. Callie Pliego helps me and many others do that by her example and friendship. And she has been helping all of us by sharing her stories during this series. She's generously shared glimpses from some pretty hard, unfinished places where it's clear that the labor is messy, long, and tough for her, inside and out. But if you know Callie, you know that she oozes tenderness, fun, and joy, along with a dose of fierceness. Here's Callie one more time.
A couple of days ago, my son Mateo had been crying, and he came close to me and said, "Mommy, I'm crying tears of joy." Then, a moment later, he said, "What's joy, Mommy?" This little story makes me laugh. It's funny that Mateo would repeat a phrase he'd heard and not understand in such a perfect way. As it turns out, he learned this from SpongeBob SquarePants, which makes it even funnier. The flawless irony of it makes me laugh, too, because for me, Mateo is joy embodied. Valerie Kaur's family has a daily dance practice that keeps them grounded in joy. I have to say the Pliego household is aligned with that practice. I love when music fills our house, whether 311, Carlos Santana, Kids Bop, or Coffin Dance. We don't usually have to dig deep to find the motivation to push the coffee table out of the way and dance around the living room. It's even better in the summertime when we can use the DIY dance floor Felix set up in the backyard. That's the space where dance battles, breakdancing practice, and spontaneous family salsa dancing breaks out. I treasure these sweet moments of joy with my family. Joy is also being fully present in the here and now, allowing past hurts and worries of the future to dissipate, even if just for a moment. In these times, I feel my heart swell and tears leak from my eyes. I can just stop and appreciate the love bond I share with whomever is by my side. It's revolutionary. These moments, both the profound and the trivial, keep me anchored in my purpose and give me energy and strength to keep breathing and pushing through the sweet labor of love that can sometimes feel like a heavy burden. Mateo also brings us into the present. When Felix and I are looking at our phones and just generally distracted, Mateo will proclaim with authority, "Everyone, stop looking at your phones. Watch this." And then he'll do some funny trick or show us a Mario video on YouTube. It's like my favorite band 311 says, "Life is all around. Why are you looking down? Life is all around. So look up. Look up. Breathe in the present moment. Feel your body receive and give out love. Joy. It's the gift of love."
Joy is the gift of love. Don't hesitate. Give in to it, says Mary Oliver. And Callie reminds us to feel it in our body, to feel our body give it and receive it. Yes. As we learn what resilience and joy feel like in us, emotionally and physically, our bodies and emotions and feelings, even the bad ones, the hard things, can become our friends and teachers to help us come back and give in to joy more readily. We can't force joy. It is a grace we can only give in to. But science and the Bible and wisdom teachers from across time and faiths and place all seem to point to one practice that helps us give in to joy. And that is this: saying thank you. Not just thinking it, but expressing it in tangible ways with details. Jesus asked his friends to remember him every time they chewed on bread or took a sip of wine. And that would have been every day, multiple times for them. In Greek, that remembering meal is called the Eucharist. And that means giving thanks. Eucharist. That's from that same root word as kara, joy, and charis, grace. Give thanks in ways you can chew on, swallow, and share. That's my assignment to myself and to all of you listening. Say thank you every day this week. Chew on it, Swallow it. Share it. Maybe you write one thing each day in a notebook. Maybe you take turns before dinner to say thank you. Maybe you have a friend that you text thank yous back and forth with. Write it in the air as you lay in bed. Dance it out in the kitchen while you wait for your tea water to warm up. Find tangible ways to express gratitude this week and see if it makes some more space for joy. In Valerie Kaur's Sikh, S-I-K-H, faith tradition, joy is described as an ever-rising energy, one that is always there in and around you. You can learn to feel it even in the midst of great labors, even when it feels like too heavy a burden. Could this be what Jesus was talking about when he said, "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Come to me when it feels like too much. Come to me in the night when you are feeling sad and scared. The arms of love are open and wide, like those of my parents that night when I was 9. They delight in your giving into them. They can hold all the heaviness with you and much, much more. Father Greg Boyle talks about the no matter whatness of a God who is way too busy loving us to ever be disappointed. Joy comes when we suddenly realize that we are part of that open-armed, ever-rising, no-matter-whatness, extending our arms wide open beyond what always feels comfortable, conventional, or known in order to love. Don't be surprised if you find yourself with your arms around someone or theirs around you. Don't be surprised when the tears come. Maybe they're tears of laughter. Maybe you're even dancing and singing over the rainbow with abandon in your leotard and your rainbow knee highs. Because you can. Just for the joy of being alive together with all that this fleeting and precious life brings. Wonder, grief, anger, all parts of love. And joy is their gift. It has open arms for you, all of you, all of us. Don't hesitate. Say thank you. Opt in.
Thanks for listening. This conversation gets richer as we share it with people in our own lives. Find discussion resources and ways to connect on our website, fabricmpls.com. See, Fabric isn't trying to find and teach the right ideas, but to help us weave our lives together deeply toward wholeness and interconnectedness with each other and the very fabric of the universe, which sounds a lot like revolutionary love.